At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Here he is in all of his radiant glory, just got done feeding the reindeer, and he's in the studio, my friend, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you?
I'm good. A little cold out there, a little snow on the ground, but hey, it's winter. It's December.
I am a little concerned, though. You didn't shop for my Christmas present yet?
Oh, it's coming.
It's coming.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
You'll get yours right after I get mine.
Okay. Well, believe me, you are going to get something. I guarantee right. you that. Okay. What are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about a ranching situation that's a little bit different than some of the other ranching situations we've talked about.
Can't hold it a minute. Do you see what we got here in the studio?
Yeah, we got one fly in Cache County,
alive.
And it's here.
It's here.
It's visiting.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, I'm going to talk about a guy by the name of Granville Stewart, and I like this story because this comes from his journal, his writings. So, it's to me, these are the kind of stories that are really accurate as far as what really happened. And I just want to say something, folks. If you have not started or kept a journal, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because someday your kids, your grandkids are going to want to know about you. And so I always put it this way, who do you want to tell your story, you or somebody else?
There
so
you go.
I'd encourage you folks just to, even if you only write in it once or twice or three times a year. So anyway, so this Granville Stewart, he was among the men who fought the odds to establish themselves in northern ranching. And he actually came from Iowa in his teens to hunt for gold. And he didn't have much luck there, so he turned to what they call road ranching in order to survive. Now, let me explain road ranching. Hmm. Well, actually, I think that'll come along as we go here.
Okay.
Road ranching is a little different technique, okay? Now, he enjoyed the friendship of the men. He earned their respect. He was an excellent shot with a rifle, and he was pretty good at poker. But the one thing he never joined in their favorite pastime, drinking. He never imbibed in alcohol.
Really?
He was a self-taught scholar who loved books more than anything in life and had such a love for learning that he eventually actually helped found a school, he collected a personal library of over 3,000 books. And it may seem ironic, but he married an Indian woman who, you know, wasn't probably lettered or, you know,
educated,
but that's what a lot of those guys did back then.
I've heard that name. Yeah. Before.
Yeah. Well, as we go along, you might recognize more because he has a brother we're going to talk about, too.
Oh, okay.
But he was a peaceful man. He had morals. He had a respect for the law. But when rustlers threatened the survival of his ranch, he led a group of pretty merciless vigilantes to hunt the outlaws down and string them up. And we'll talk a little more about that.
Mm.
So Granville Stewart started his career in Montana as a road rancher and went on to tackle a bunch of different things on the western frontier. Prospector, horse trader, blacksmith, boomtown merchant, cattleman, civic leader, legislator, and through all this he made no fortune from ranching or any of his other things. He did a lot of stuff, but
he never made any money.
He didn't, and he died.
So what else is new?
Yeah. So he died at the age of 84 and was known as Mr. Montana. So, let's go back to the beginning, okay? 1852, at the age of 17, Granville Stewart and his brother James, who was 20, they left the farmlands of Iowa for the gold fields of California. After 5 years of prospecting that brought them really nothing, they decided to go home for a visit. Well, so now it's the summer of 1857. They started east with 9 other men for companionship as well as for protection. But it was while they were camped at the head of a place called Malad Creek, which is about 50 miles north of the Great Salt Lake, and that's where Granville's destiny was sealed. He was stricken with a near-fatal fever, and for 7 weeks, he couldn't move. He
really?
Was down.
Really?
But slowly, on a diet of sage tea and rabbit broth, Granville was nursed back to health by his brother.
No, rabbit so, broth?
Rabbit broth. But, you know, think about it. You know, chicken broth, rabbit broth, something, you know, it makes sense to
okay.
me. But so he finally got well enough he could get on a horse. Well, they ran into a guy by the name of Jake Meeks, and he was an experienced mountain man who was camped nearby. Now, he suggested the Stewart brothers ride north with him some 200 miles to a sheltered valley in the Rockies where they could winter over the winter. And so late in October, the small party arrived in Beaver Head Valley, east of the Bitterroot Mountains.
Been there.
Okay, yep. So winter that year was mild, mm-hmm. and the men were snug in their elk skin tents, and there were a lot of deer and elk around, so they had plenty of food. But the Stewarts soon fell in with other mountain men who were wintering in the valley. But the Stewarts soon learned the ropes of trading with the Indians, and over the course of the winter, they kept up a brisk business with friendly bands of the Nez Perce.
What year was that?
That was 1857.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
All right.
So they were dealing with the Nez Perce, and of course we know they had great breeding program with the horses
right.
and skillful.
Right.
But this is a quote from him: the price of a common horse was, quote, was two blankets, one shirt, one pair of cloth leggings, one small mirror, one knife. That was what you would trade to
really?
An Indian for a horse. And again, these are nice horses.
If
you know,
they could get more, they would.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. But by the spring of 1858, the brothers had acquired 20 horses in trade, and they hoped to sell them to the army at Fort Bridger. Well, the Stewarts headed south by way of Deer Lodge Valley, which Deer Lodge, Montana,
yeah.
Where they'd heard a man had found some gold a few years earlier. And, you know, the lure of gold. I mean, you know, you start
there you
of,
go.
Yeah, here we go. So anyway, so they traveled to the mouth of this creek, and they worked their way 5 miles upstream and downstream. They dug a hole where the water would run into it, and they would wash the sand and gravel. They actually used a tin bread pan for a panning pan. But and the work paid off at 10 cents in fine gold to the pan, which is not a huge amount. But anyway, they figured be a bonanza somewhere close by, and unfortunately they did not have the equipment or the provisions to stay and try to find it. So the Stewarts set themselves as road ranchers at one of the crossings of the Green River and were soon acquiring livestock that had become a burden to the wagon trains. Now this is where the term road ranchers comes in, Zeb. The people are coming through with their wagon trains, okay? And a lot of times their cattle or horses are spent. You know, they're bad.
Oh.
So these road ranchers would sell them, a couple of good oxen
so
or
basically
horses.
Fresh animals.
Right. And then they would take, say...
The old...
But take four horses for their two good ones.
I see.
So that's where the term road ranching comes into play.
Okay.
But the Stewarts rode ranched, and they drove their small but increasing herd of horses and cattle back into the mountain valleys for winter grazing. So in the fall of 1860, still attempting to supplement their meager income with gold, they drove their stock, 60 head by now, up to Deer Lodge again. And there they built a cabin, they cut poles for a corral, and nearby was this stream that they had panned a couple of years earlier. Well, their plan was to spend the winter there hunting and caring for their stock and try some prospecting. But again, no quick fortune. And in fact, the diary that Stewart kept, he said, quote, tolerably good prospects only by following. He said, quote, washed 7 pans of dirt and got 6 cents.
Oh, my.
So they're not doing a lot of
not a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, their only optimistic inventory came from their corral of 19 young calves, 4 yearlings, 33 cows, 15 oxen, 2 young steers, and 3 bulls.
And a partridge and a pear tree.
And a partridge. You've read this. You've read this. Okay. But, you know... back then, you know, female companionship was kind of important, and so...
I'm waiting to hear how you're going to handle this.
Very carefully.
I see.
Granville and James, the brothers, they followed the custom of the frontier, and they took common law Indian wives.
Uh-huh.
And that was, that again, a common thing.
Draw on your own.
So, we're moving ahead. So, life for the Stewart brothers became a little more comfortable, at the same time a little more businesslike, for with the families on the way, they had to have a steady income. So, in 1862, they opened up a butcher shop and a saloon grocery store.
And this is where? Up
in Montana, by Deer Lodge area.
I see.
Yeah. they opened up these businesses, but they still wanted to strike it rich with gold, if only they knew where to find it, which is typical. But anyway, as it turned out, there was considerable gold in Montana, and by 1863, major strikes were being made in the general area of Deer Lodge, though not by the Stewarts. They weren't having any luck. So Granville and James began to prosper a little bit in the road ranching, again, trading poor animals for good. And then they started supplying miners with fresh meat, and that was a good business. They started a blacksmith shop, a dry goods store at Virginia City, and later another store at Deer Lodge. Now, unfortunately, they didn't have enough money to support their ventures. They didn't have enough cattle to supply the need for beef. The opportunity to make a killing for the miners rather than from the mines kind of slipped through their fingers. They just didn't have very good luck all the way around.
They worked hard.
They did, you know, and the same opportunity was seized, however, by a newcomer by the name of Conrad Coors, and this guy actually went on to be very successful.
Well, isn't Conrad Coors part, how's it spelled?
It's K-O-H-R-S.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Okay, Conrad Coors. So he thrived. He did very well, but the Stewart brothers were making a living, but not much more. So in 1871, Granville started to, he wrote to his brother James, he said, "Why can't we make enough money to support our kids and our family and for clothes?" It was just really frustrating for him.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the elusiveness of financial success had not kept Granville from trying his hand at a number of intellectual pursuits.
Intellectual.
Intellectual.
What does that mean?
Instead of using your back, you're going to use your head, your brain.
So he's going to give up on all the hard work.
Yes, maybe.
I see.
Well, between his chores as a butcher and a blacksmith, he worked on a manuscript that included a history of the region and its gold strikes. So again, this is why I like this, because he wrote this stuff down.
I see.
And a guide to local Indian languages and customs. And in 1865, this first book about the new territory was published in New York under the title Montana as It Is. So the same year, Granville helped found actually the Historical Society of Montana and served as its first secretary.
Really?
So he had a lot of things that he did and did well, I think. But
now, the brother, he had a brother.
Right, and we're going to get that brother, unfortunately.
Okay.
So Granville Stewart, you know, his literary skills were bringing him a little bit of fame, but in 1873, the bottom dropped out of his life because his brother James died at the age of 42.
Oh, my.
And these, you know, here they'd been through all this together.
Yeah.
Granville and James, and, you know, it really hit him hard.
And neither one were married except for the common law Indian wife.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, like I say, then the bottom dropped out of the economy. He was not able to make any money. So Granville busied himself by selling off some of the property that they'd gotten over the years. But he still had to provide for a growing family. And that now he had four daughters and two sons in the family. And reluctantly, he accepted a position as a bookkeeper in the First National Bank of Helena, courtesy of an old prospecting buddy of his brother's.
Wow.
So now he's in the banking business.
Uh-huh.
And probably the first smart move that he actually made.
Yeah, there we go.
So anyway, during the latter half of the 1870s, the recession gradually got better. The railroads resumed their march toward Montana. The cattle business picked up briskly. Montana cattlemen and Texans, too, were driving thousands of longhorns up into Montana.
Yeah, and it got so big, weren't they taking a lot of those same cattle and trailing them across to Belle Fouche to sell them?
You know, I'm not sure, but they marketed them wherever, either by train or whatever.
To get on the rail.
Right.
Yeah.
But Granville Stewart, oddly enough, proved himself to be an excellent manager of other people's money, mostly cattlemen's money. Not so good with his, but with others. Well, he began thinking seriously about getting into ranching. So Stewart formed a ranching partnership with a guy by the name of Andrew Davis. And this guy was a wealthy miner and banker from Butte, Montana.
I see.
And because of his ranching experience, Stewart was appointed superintendent and general manager of this new ranching operations. So here we are, spring of 1880. Okay, Stewart had contracted to buy a starter herd of cattle in Montana and Oregon and had begun to search for a land for a ranch in Montana. He spent 3 months.
So he bought the cattle first?
Well, his partner, yeah. They had the cattle, but now they needed to find a ranch.
I would say.
So he spent about 3 months traveling all through Montana, and he finally found a place in central Montana called the Judith Basin. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that, Zeb?
Yep.
Okay.
Beautiful area.
So, and he says, quote, "All of this country for 100 miles in every direction is well-grassed, well-watered, and good shelter."
Yep.
"There was an abundance of yellow pine for fencing and buildings."
Mm-hmm.
So the big ranch house itself was built by 1880. Stewart had a main building completed, 5,000 head of cattle, 60 horses, and Stewart at last was a rancher. And, you know, this is what he really wanted to do. But when he wasn't buying or selling cattle or doing the paperwork demanded of every ranch manager, he actually went out and rode with the guys, with the cowboys. And he says here, quote, "It was no simple matter to keep animals and Indians separate. Bands of Crees from a large reservation north of the Missouri River helped themselves to some of Stewart's beef. On one occasion, some 1,200 Blackfeet had camped just above the ranch and were attempting to run off some of the stock. So Stewart took a bunch of men and simply told the Indians, quote, 'You pack up your teepees and rattle hawks out of here and stay across the Missouri River after this, or I will wipe you out.'" Now, I don't know what that term "rattle hawks" means.
It means to hurry up and get at a gallop, buddy.
Get the heck out.
Yeah.
Don't let the door hit you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Stewart's men admired him because he was an honest guy, and he treated his work, his hired men, very well. And there was a few Indian raids, but anyway, Stewart was finally making good under his management. The herd grew to 12,000. Now, here's a little difference, Zeb. But instead of the stringy Texas Longhorns, they had the fat shorthorn stock from Idaho and Oregon. And these were better beef, better eating.
Yeah.
So I've never eaten the Longhorn, but
I have.
Have you?
Yeah, many
not
times.
Not too bad.
Many times.
So anyway, so he had these thoroughbred bulls, and as was customary in that time, they'd had their roundup. Okay, so even for Stewart, you know, this was a sight to witness. I mean, a big spring roundup. They would have a dance the night before. There would be a lot of gathering of the ladies and the kids and the men. A big horse herd would be driven in. They'd pick out their horses, and each outfit would contribute men and horses. You'd have like 60 or 70 guys all gathering together to go out and gather up from the different ranches. And actually, and I didn't know this, but the ladies would often ride out to the first corral to watch the branding and stay for lunch at the chuck wagon.
Really?
So it was really a social event.
A family deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the range, Stewart wrote, he said the work was hard and fast. The cattle had to be branded. They'd be cut out. They'd, you know, be roped and wrestled to the ground, branded. Dust, heat, smell of singed hair. I mean, you can just smell that, can't you?
Just like Lonesome Dove.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it took from 4 to 6 weeks to complete the process of identifying the several herds, driving them to their home ranges. And as soon as this was done, of course, then there was other work. They had to put up hay for the winter, get the corrals in shape, get the horses gathered up. And in the fall, there was another roundup of calves, which usually required another 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
Well, late in 1883, Stewart and his trail drivers drove a consignment of beef southwest 120 miles to the rail station. So Stewart recalled this. He said, quote, "And it required eternal vigilance to keep them from stampeding and running all the fat off." And, you know, when a cow runs, they're going to lose some of the fat.
Yep.
And that was always a danger. So here's what he said. "It happened on a dark, sleet-driven night. After the trail drivers had settled the herd as best they could, Stewart lay down. He bedded down. Then at about 11 o'clock, something spooked the herd."
Uh-oh, look out.
"Instantly, every animal was on its feet, and also in an instant, every man was in the saddle after them.
Yeah.
The night was pitch dark. There was nothing to guide us," he said. "They must be stopped, and the only way to do it was to get ahead of them and turn the leaders so that the herd could move in a circle. Start them milling in a circle.
Right. Yep.
You know, I've ridden horses a lot of times, Zeb, but I've never done it on a dead run in pitch black.
Not an occasion that you would welcome.
No. But they succeeded, and anyway, the cattle crossed the Yellowstone River without further incident. They were loaded at the railhead and eventually arrived in Chicago.
Really?
So, but anyway, the prosperity of the stockmen brought another plague in the form of organized bands of horse and cattle rustlers. And they were convinced that the law was not going to be very effective, so Stewart called a secret meeting, and precisely who attended was never revealed. Okay. The unofficial war began, and after hanging two thieves, Stewart became known with his group as Stewart's Stranglers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were to be reckoned with. Anyway, so now we're in 1884. Stewart was leading a party of nine vigilantes to a cabin that was being, that there were some horse thieves and cattle thieves in this cabin. They surrounded the cabin. They started shooting. Turned out to be there was 12 outlaws in this cabin. And when everything was said and done, Stewart said they kept up the fight until they were all killed. They started a fire, burnt the cabin. And so, like I say, they were a group to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
So anyway, while these bloody events were occupying Montana's, the territory's cattle were growing fat, bringing excellent prices. Then came that drought of 1886. No water. That was the year of the sub-zero temperatures.
Oh, my.
That was when cattle, by the thousands and thousands, died. They couldn't, they just died because of
the extreme. So you're going to say it wiped him out.
It did. He was hurt so bad financially, and so he withdrew from the cattle business. And actually, when he died, he was in the midst of writing and rewriting his recollections of Montana. But as I said, he died at the age of 84.
So he died basically a penniless man.
He did. I don't know whatever happened
wow.
with his family.
Wow.
But anyway, that...
While you were going through the story about him, didn't you, when you read it for the first time, draw the correlation of how the movie and the story of the Virginian and Lonesome Dove and Tom Horn all played into some of the sequences you were talking about?
Yeah, and this was right during those time periods.
Because like the Virginian, they went out and they caught anybody that was a rustler and strung them up.
Yeah.
And the best friend of the Virginian in the novel, Trampas, was one of the guys they strung up.
Oh.
Yeah. And it brought to mind what's happening here.
Yeah. I look at this guy's life and I think, you did a lot of things, a lot of good things. And yeah, you might have strung up a few guys, but maybe they needed it.
Yeah.
But the fact that he kept a record
of everything
is, to me, is priceless. And that's why I encourage people, keep a journal, write things down. I wish I had more of my grandparents and great-grandparents' stories.
Oh, I do, too. I really do. Hey, I'm out of time.
I know you are.
I've got to run, but that was good.
Thank you,
Granville
Jeff.
Stewart.
Yes.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.